It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, Stephen Sondheim composed some of Broadway's biggest musicals. He was part of West Side Story, Into the Woods, and more. We'll talk to a Milwaukee journalist who covered Sondheim's work for years and got to know the musical theater legend. First, Larry Mueller joins us now because it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for great conversations. It's your gift of any amount that makes those conversations possible. Listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. That's why your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such a big deal. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Rob. Great to be back with you. And a big thanks to everyone who has given during the drive, and especially the last hour. I believe we had 8 folks contribute during the hour. And now we have a goal of 10 contributions during this hour. And these goals are set up to make sure that WPR has the money to pay for the programs you rely on.
Let's meet that goal. It happens one gift at a time. Let's start with yours right now online at WPR.org or make a phone call, 888-202-2552.
A large part of our funding for our shows, in fact, the biggest slice, is listener support. So while all of our funding sources, that we got the state, the federal government, we got businesses, they're all important, of course, but your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR, it's an amazing and varied service that is thanks to your support. So I hope you'll keep us independent. Keep those high-quality programs on the air coming at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
It's $10 Tuesday. What does that mean? Well, it's Tuesday. You may have figured that part out already. The $10 part means support the programs you love with the new WPR t-shirt when you give. Here comes the 10. $10 a month or more. So it's this comfy navy t-shirt. It celebrates how WPR programming makes us feel informed, inspired, and connected. Ask for yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This $10 a month offer only available today. Tomorrow goes back up to $12 a month.
And if you've only discovered Wisconsin Public Radio recently, we want you to know that WPR is listener-driven. It's it's not profit-driven. You get more programming per hour because we don't have to take time out of the long blocks of commercials.
Our business here is to inform and entertain you and serve up quality programs for you to enjoy. WPR is your station. It's possibly because listeners like you give what they can to support it. Show your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And of course, we know you value your time, and we value your time too. So going to Wisconsin Public Radio just takes a couple of minutes. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
It's quick. It's easy to do. Your gift right now really does help. Take the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, we've got 50 minutes left in the hour, and we're still looking for, I believe, 10 contributions. You make it all possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
As an added bonus, you'll get entered to win $250 to spend at your favorite technology store when you make a gift of any amount for the programs you love. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll have 3 chances to win. Sustainers, if you already make those ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered.
And if you're not a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's easy to set up monthly donations. It could be from your bank account, might be from your credit card. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552, and you'll be providing ongoing support for the programs you love.
We heard from Ann in Madison, who says, I appreciate the great local programming WPR offers, such as The Larry Mueller Show and Central Time. Well, that's perfect, Larry.
I love that.
Do we have any other shows?
There's a couple more.
Definitely. Well, that's great to hear, Ann. Thank you so much. And hey, we've already gotten our first gift this hour just since we started talking. Thank you so much. How about you? We count on you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on us for great conversations each and every day on the Ideas Network, on the Larry Mueller Show, here on Central Time. You can help make it all happen. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. Yesterday is gone.
merrily we roll along, bursting with dreams.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Stephen Sondheim was one of musical theater's greatest composers and songwriters. He created the music and/or lyrics for some of Broadway's biggest productions: West Side Story, Sweeney Todd, Into the Woods, and a whole lot more, including Merrily We Roll Along. That's the title song there. Our next guest became one of Sondheim's most devoted fans, and while working as a journalist in Milwaukee, started his own magazine dedicated to covering Sondheim's productions, past and present. In the process, he got to know the composer, and that connection is the subject of his new book. Paul Salcini is an author and journalist. He was a reporter and editor with the Milwaukee Journal for 37 years and Wisconsin correspondent for the New York Times. In 1994, he founded the Sondheim Review, which he edited for 10 years. His new book is called Sondheim and Me, Revealing a Musical Genius. Paul, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
When did you first become aware of Stephen Sondheim and, as you say, start recognizing his musical genius?
Okay. Well, I was always interested in musical theater, but I got turned on to Sondheim when I went to New York in 1972 on a business trip, and I stumbled into a show called Follies. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know who composed it, but I was just blown away. It was so beautiful. The score was so wonderful, and the story had so many layers. And it was, in fact, the story of our human follies. And I could go on and on about that. But anyway, I learned that the composer for this show was Stephen Sondheim. So I came home and I started researching Stephen Sondheim with a vengeance and looked up everything I could about him, started collecting material about him, and eventually started to write notes to him and get more information. At that point, I was thinking vaguely about writing a book about him, but that did not turn out.
And one thing I love, and this is a huge part of your book, you wrote notes to him, and he wrote back a little bit at first, and as you started to do more, he started to write more at length. You evolved into this very long-term correspondence with Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah, he's known for writing notes, but the notes that he wrote to me were often accompanied by gifts. He sent me, for example, a cassette tape of a show that was never produced. It was called Saturday Night. And he sent me the Backers audition tape of that show, which was very, very rare. He sent me sheet music for two college productions that he had written. And I sent him a few things. So we established a good relationship during the 1980s.
A lot of people might have stopped there. You went further and put together the quarterly Sondheim Review. What were you hoping to do with this four-time-a-year review?
Well, as I said, I was thinking about writing a book, but that was not possible. And so I decided that I would write, I would found and edit a magazine called the Sondheim Review. It was not going to be a fan magazine. It was not going to be a scholarly magazine. It was going to be a journalistic magazine because, after all, I was a journalist. So it would include news and reviews and interviews and essays and everything that people who are interested in Sondheim's works would be interested in reading. It would not be about him. It was always about Sondheim's works. And so I established a staff somehow. I can't believe I had that chutzpah to do this. I would not be able to do it now. I know that. But I somehow found editors and writers and a designer and a businessman and a printer, and we just did it. It was like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney. Let's put on a show, and so we did. And it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun and very gratifying.
And what is Stephen Sondheim's response to, you're pretty far off Broadway in Milwaukee there, and you're putting this together, this journal on his work. What did he think about that initially?
I know. I wondered what he thought about it. I think he thought, well, he didn't really know what it was going to be about until it actually came out. And our relationship changed, because before that, it was, you know, he was sort of a nice guy who was writing me and this guy in Milwaukee on information about his shows. But now I was the editor of a magazine devoted to his works, and he learned to respect the magazine very, very much. And that's why he sent me notes that would correct some things that were in the magazine, most of them really minor. But he said that he wanted the magazine to be a source for scholars. So he obviously did respect the magazine as a source, and that he wanted everything in the magazine to be accurate and correct, just as he wanted everything in his works to be accurate and correct.
We're hearing from Paul Salcini, Milwaukee journalist and founder of the Sondheim Review, which covered the works of musical theater composer Stephen Sondheim. Paul's new book is called Sondheim and Me, Revealing a Musical Genius. We'll hear more of that conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret, talking to Paul Salcini, longtime Milwaukee journalist, looking at his latest book. It's called Sondheim and Me, Revealing a Musical Genius, about the work and career of Stephen Sondheim and Paul's relationship with him over the years. One thing, you've got so much visual in the book. Editions of your Sondheim review, pictures of cast members, Sondheim himself at interviews. Can you talk about, curating and putting together this collection of images?
Putting together the insert collection? Yes, that was a great amount of work. In fact, that is an interesting story. When I was writing the book, I said to the publisher, wouldn't it be nice to have maybe 10 or 12 pages in the middle of the book of photos? And he said, no, we're going to have 64 pages.
Oh, wow.
And so he said, you know, and I was just blown away. And so he set his designer to work, and I provided the material. All of that material is from the issues of the Sondheim Review that I edited. And she did a terrific job of selecting them, the material. There's photos, there's photo productions. I'm especially pleased that we had handwritten lyrics by him. There's covers of the magazine and other covers. So it's I call it a Sondheim scrapbook. And I think it's a very enticing thing. And the other thing that the publisher surprised me with was the chronology of Sondheim's life from his beginning to his death. And I hadn't known about that either until I saw proofs. So I think that will be very important for people who want to know about Sondheim and all of the details of his life, because it's very, I think there's 23 pages of the chronology. And I'm very proud of that as well.
Now, something that struck me as interesting, not everybody's going to make it to a Sondheim show on Broadway in New York. Probably the thing people would be most familiar with is the West Side Story movie musical, the original one. Reading your book, one non-fan was Stephen Sondheim. He didn't always like the way his plays, his musicals were converted into movies.
Yeah, he didn't like the movie, the original movie of West Side Story. He did like the new one a couple of years ago, the Steven Spielberg one. And he was a little embarrassed by some of the lyrics that he wrote for West Side Story. but he actually only wrote the lyrics for West Side Story. Leonard Bernstein, of course, wrote the music. And it is probably his most famous work, though it's not the typical, I don't think, of all of his work.
One thing I found really interesting as a musician, Paul, is in your correspondence and your reporting on Sondheim's work, is how much from the initial concept and the initial songwriting through the final product, how much songs, themes, plots could change from beginning to what we end up seeing when we pay to see the show.
I think one of the most interesting things in the book is that during this whole decade that I was editor, 1994 to 2004, Sondheim was writing a show which was originally called Wise Guys, and then it was called Gold, and then it was called Bounce, and it ended up being called Roadshow. And it changed dramatically over the 10 years. And what was interesting to me was that when we got on the phone and he talked about the changes, he would get so excited about everything that was happening in the course of the writing and of the show and the changes that were being made by him and by John Weidman, who was writing the book. But I would listen to him and just keep smiling because he would be so excited about what was going on. And it reminded me, you know, the show Sunday in the Park with George is the story about the creation, the first act is the creation of Sunday Afternoon on the Isle of Grand Jatte by Sirode. And that story is more about the painter of that painting and George. And Sondheim, when he was talking about this musical he was writing, reminded me so much of George, because one song that George sings, which is sort of autobiographical, I would think, is called Finishing the Hat. It's the story of how a painter has to finish painting the hat that he's doing for this massive painting. And that's what Sondheim was doing. He had to finish. He was compelled to finish this show, even though the reviews for the show as it went along and its different iterations were not that great. He was committed to do this because he was committed to the story and the score and the audiences. He was concerned that they would be pleased with what he was creating.
And Stephen Sondheim passed away a year ago Saturday, I believe it was. Do you see releasing this book as your part of a tribute to his life and his work?
Yeah, I do. When he died, I went through the notes that he had sent me, the letters, and then I went through all of the issues of the magazine that I had edited. I hadn't looked at all my Sondheim material for so long, because I had taken a different path. I was writing fiction for many years. It's always set in Tuscany, the land of my roots. And so when I went back to the Sondheim material, I realized that there was so much there that was so interesting and revealing about Sondheim that I thought readers would be interested in reading it. So that's when I started writing the book, and it didn't take that long to write, because I guess I'm a journalist, so one writes fast. I was really pleased with how it came out.
Paul, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you for asking me.
That's Paul Salcini, author, journalist, founder of the Sondheim Review, covering the works of musical theater composer, the legendary Stephen Sondheim. Paul was a longtime journalist in Milwaukee. He shared his latest book, Sondheim and Me, Revealing a Musical Genius. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Larry Mueller joins me in the studio. Your gift right now is so important because gifts from people like you are the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Central Time and all the shows you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we have about, 34 minutes left in this hour, and we have eight more people to join in. What about you? Thanks if you've already given. If you haven't, give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and your gift funds the programs you enjoy.
In that last conversation, we heard from a longtime Milwaukee journalist who developed this connection, this rapport, this correspondence with Stephen Sondheim, legendary Broadway composer. We love to feature the work, the stuff that people around Wisconsin are doing, their obsessions in some cases. You can hear this kind of stuff on the Larry Mueller Show and here on Central Time. And Larry, you and I have a duet from West Side Story. When you're a jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dime. Larry's not ready. I dropped this on Larry. Sorry. But no, this is the kind of conversation you get all the time here on Central Time.
Oh, man. And here we are, listener supported. And that means that you're donating at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
I feel like if we did a lot of vocal duets, Larry, you and me, we'd have a lot fewer listeners and probably a lot fewer donors. I'll speak for myself anyway. You may have a magical singing voice I don't know about.
No, I once sang in a barbershop quartet when
I was a young man.
Yeah.
I heard about that. I mean, I didn't hear the quartet. I mean, we should develop something out of this, definitely. Well, hey, here's something you can develop. You can develop a sustaining membership here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Choose a monthly amount that works for you and set it up as an ongoing gift from your bank account or your credit card. Then that support will go right to work toward the programming you appreciate.
Your support will always be current, and that means that month after month and year after year, you're making important programs available to all. You can become a sustainer right now. I know it's going to feel great with a gift of $20 or maybe $10 a month at whatever amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I heard from one listener who made a donation and said we could live without WPR, though we sure wouldn't want to. Maybe you feel the same way, that listening to WPR makes your life better.
And, you know, whether it's keeping up with the news, maybe enjoying some music, the laughs you get from the weekend shows, or the fascinating discussions on the Ideas Network, there's always really something good to listen to.
Because WPR makes your life better. Help keep it going. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 really does make a difference.
And when you're thinking, think about what you spend money on every day. Is it coffee, maybe takeout? That adds up. It's easy to spend on things that are part of your routine.
WPR is part of your routine, too. It's your news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn. So spend some cash on it today. Start with a dollar a day. That's $30 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And here we are with 30 minutes to go in the hour, and we still have 6 more gifts to receive from people. So I hope you'll join in right now and help us knock that down to 5 or 4 or all the way down to 0. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Thanks so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Up next, a key drug used to treat overdoses could become available over-the-counter after a recommendation from an FDA advisory committee. A Wisconsin expert on drugs and overdoses joins the show for a look at the idea. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Larry Mueller joins me now here in the studio. Your gift makes a huge difference because listeners are the largest source of funding for all your favorite WPR programs. Step up and be counted right now as a supporter with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Rob, when 6 more people join in during the next 24 minutes, we will meet our goal. These hourly goals are set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy. So make your donations right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
When you listen to the Ideas Network, you make your community a better place because you're an engaged, informed citizen. When you give to WPR, you're doubling the good that you do.
That's because WPR is listener-funded, and that means that your financial support is what makes this incredible service available to you and the entire state. So do something amazing right now. Help make the Ideas Network possible when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, when you listen, you make it worthwhile to do shows here at Wisconsin Public Radio, right? If nobody listened, there'd be no point in doing it. So we got that far. Now, when you give, you actually help make these programs possible in the first place.
You get all these great shows like Central Time because members, people like you who donate, kick in the largest amount of funding for our shows. So become a member right now. Help make WPR possible with your gift of $100 or $10 a month or any amount you choose at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
This member drive support the programs you love in style with the new WPR t-shirt. This super comfy shirt features a mustard-colored message. informed, inspired, connected, on a Navy background.
I would probably wear it everywhere. I mean, it's a way to actually let individuals know a great station to listen to and how to get some information that they may not have access to otherwise.
People would think I know what I'm talking about when I wear this t-shirt. People would really think that I have got my stuff together when I'm wearing this t-shirt.
Well, I think mustard yellow is an underrated color, so I love the color.
The new WPR t-shirt is only available for $10 a month today, $10 Tuesday. Ask for yours when you give now. Here's how.
Make that gift. Grab that t-shirt at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with special guest Larry Mueller from The Larry Mueller Show. The WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. Your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a big difference.
You know, if I'd been told mustard yellow and then not seen the t-shirt, I wouldn't have been happy.
It's the lettering, right?
The shirt is a different kind of mustard than I'm used to. It's not that really bright, gaudy one.
Well, it's great. This is a great shirt for somebody like me because I eat a lot of things with mustard, A, and two, I'm a sloppy eater. So I like that kind of camouflage, the mustard camouflage concept. This works for me, Larry. It works for me.
Well, I hope it works for me because I'm like you. There's always dipping the tie in the soup or...
don't wear ties.
Well, once in a while I do. Well, what about you? Today, when you support the WPR programs you love, you can give an amount that's comfortable for you. Many people give $10 a month. Some give $100 a month.
Whatever amount you give, it'll support the programs that enhance your life, that give you information and entertainment every day. So give now whatever amount works for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's kind of nice that you get to choose how much you give. A contribution of any amount makes a difference. And here are some suggestions. Why not contribute the same amount you pay for your monthly streaming service? I get Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like 50 of them now, or like 90. I lose count.
There's a lot of them. But think about what you pay for Netflix or maybe Disney Plus or maybe HBO Max subscription services, cable.
Yeah. So think about that amount and think about Wisconsin Public Radio. We don't bill you. We don't charge you before you can listen to the Larry Mueller Show or Central Time. But we do ask you if you're able to help pay for it with an amount that you get to choose. Make that gift right now. Subscribe, quote unquote, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Less than 20 minutes left in this hour. We're looking for four more people to join in. You make WPR possible with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Added bonus for supporting the programs you love. You get entered into an exciting drawing today. Three lucky people are going to win $250 to spend at their favorite technology store. No gift necessary. See WPR.org/drawing for details. Better yet, you are automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Enter that contest. Support great radio with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Last week, advisors for the Food and Drug Administration recommended that naloxone, often known by the brand name Narcan, become available over the counter. Narcan's a drug used to help in emergency cases of opioid overdose. The FDA advisors said that by making the drug more readily available, it could help save lives. You can join in with your thoughts on that idea at 800-642-1234. If you work in healthcare as a first responder, if you've encountered this maybe at your place of work or in your own family, what do you think of this idea, making Narcan over-the-counter? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency physician at Gunderson Health, medical director for Tri-State Ambulance, and medical advisor for Region 4 for the Wisconsin Healthcare Coalition. Dr. Eberlein, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for spreading this important message today.
Dr. Eberlein, before we get to this FDA Advisory Council recommendation, can you remind us what exactly naloxone or Narcan is and what it does?
Yeah, absolutely. So it used to be a prescription drug. few years ago, they changed it to a behind-the-counter drug, and it reverses opiate overdoses centrally at the brain level and reverses the respiratory depression that you get from an opiate overdose, therefore allowing the patient to start breathing again.
What do you think of this idea, this recommendation to say not behind the counter anymore, over the counter, like drugs available in our local drugstore?
I think anything we can do to get Narcan more available is the right thing. And this is definitely a big improvement in that for multiple reasons. One, as you mentioned, right now, it's stuck behind the counter. That's just another barrier for people having to go up and ask for it. Then it's also only available at pharmacies. This way, it would be available anywhere. Any business could sell this over the counter.
Now, one question for over-the-counter availability. We know that the drug is effective when it comes to overdoses. Can everyday people use it handily? Now, there are injectable formats. As I understand it, Dr. Eberlein, the one we're talking about over-the-counter would be the nasal version. This is something that, everyday folks might be able to use without a lot of training?
Yeah, it's actually very, very simple. This is something that has been being distributed, and we've had lots of people in our community that have been saved by Narcan. In particular, the nasal formulation, as you mentioned, there is auto-injectors similar to EpiPens, where it's an actual needle into the skin. This is primarily, they're talking about the nasal, which is it's kind of like if anyone's ever used the Afrin or any nasal-type spray. It's a spray up into the nose, and it's rapidly absorbed as fast as if you were to inject it. It works remarkably well. It works quickly. Very little training involved, and it's nice that there's not another needle on scene and things like that. There's a few nuances to the training. It doesn't work well if someone has a lot of congestion in their nose. You kind of take a look in their nose before you give it to make sure they're not, there's not a bunch of blood or emesis in their nostril. But that's really the only type of contraindication to it. I always recommend people are also prepared to give rescue breathing. So I hope when they roll this out that they do something like provide some rescue barrier masks, so that way people would be more willing to give a couple rescue breaths to help reset that clock of hypoxia so EMS can get there and take over. And I also hope they continue to encourage people to call 911 if they administer Narcan. That's really an important step to get the EMS system rolling when this is given.
And one very practical piece of advice, if people find themselves in a position where they're going to give somebody this Narcan, this nasal version, one thing that people get wrong, I gather, is they might sort of spray it in the air in the vicinity of someone's face. It's got to be right up in the nose, like you said, like if you're using an over-the-counter nasal spray of any sort.
Absolutely. It's got to be right up in the nair, and you administer it then. And the formulations that I've seen like this, it's not something where you test it in the air first. Once you hit the plunger, that entire dose is going to be gone. So you really have to make sure you're ready to give it, and it's up in the nair when you give it.
Talking to Dr. Chris Eberlein, emergency physician at Gunderson Health, talking about naloxone or Narcan, an FDA advisory council saying, hey, let's make this thing over the counter to help prevent overdose deaths. Dr. Eberlein, I want to talk to you about a couple contexts where you work with Narcan. One, at Gunderson, I understand you have a Narcan program that works that behind the counter way. What have you learned from that? How is it going when it comes to making this available to people who might need it?
So, as mentioned, there is that barrier. Someone actually has to go to a pharmacy and ask for it. The other barrier is cost. And this is something that I think part of the thought of this is if they make it over the counter, perhaps there'll be a little more competition and the prices will come down. Because right now cost is a barrier. And I think we need to be upfront about that. You're talking for a two pack right now. It's running about $120 last I looked, short Google search before I came on. So, that's a very high bar to jump over it on getting this medication. So I would like to see it in the under $10 range fairly quickly if this is going to be successful on getting this drug to a much broader population, because right now the price really is prohibitive.
And as I mentioned, you work with an ambulance outfit, with first responders. As I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a very common fact of life for first responders in ambulances, fire departments, police departments, and more.
Yeah, we've really seen the overdose responses dramatically increase. You know, and all the way through this opiate epidemic, it's been high, but in the last several months, we've really seen a substantial, in our local area, substantial increase in overdose calls. And, you know, and we are, unfortunately, we have seen more overdoses in the beginning of this year. It's about equal to what we saw over half of last year. So we're already at 15 unconfirmed overdose deaths in our community. We only had roughly 40 all of last year. So we're on course to look at 3 to 4 times that level at this point, which is really tragic. We were hoping that we'd start to turn the ship a little bit here, but that just also highlights the need to start looking at other ways to get Narcan out in the communities.
So Narcan, great to have out there in the event of these overdoses, often related to fentanyl or fentanyl derivatives or fake fentanyls. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this can't be the only part of the solution, and I know you think about this a lot. What kind of things are you hoping we can do to prevent these overdoses in the first place?
Well, and I think getting back to the over-the-counter, and people have mentioned this in other articles and stuff, and the thought is this would also help reduce the stigma of opiate use disorder. So people are, you know, it's there, it's more available. So people are less likely to have that stigma when they to approach help. So that's one. We have to really keep this in the conversation. And then primary prevention, working at getting people to not start, whether that be education in schools, working with kids, working on reducing trauma in early life that we know increase your risk of mental health illnesses and addiction. So these are important building blocks on working towards this goal. Obviously, we have to keep working on things like addiction treatment, mental health treatment in general, residential treatment. One size doesn't fit all for the treatment in this, and so tailoring the right treatment to the right patient is a challenge, but we have to keep working towards that goal.
Now, the exact nature of the drugs on the illegal market is a moving target, and I understand you have your eye on a combination of a fentanyl-type drug and a sedative-type drug that's raising new concerns. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, one of the things that we noticed over the course, and one of the advantages that we've noticed in our community, we have a lot of cross-communication between EMS, law enforcement, some of our street medicine teams that go out and work with the homeless and unsheltered population. And so we meet frequently and talk about issues in our city. And EMS, we started to notice we were using higher and higher doses of Narcan or Naloxone for treatment of these overdoses. And then as time has gone on, we started to think either this is a really potent dose of fentanyl in our area or some other opiate substrate, or there's something else mixed in. Because we know that when you have a sedative mixed with an opiate, it dramatically increases your risk of overdosing. And there has been some talk from law enforcement and some of the people affected by opiate use disorder that there are other drugs mixed in, and one of the street name for it is trank. The medical term is xylazine, and it is actually an animal sedative that is commonly mixed in with opioids. And we don't have any confirmation that it is in our community, but there has been other evidence that it's here. And so that would also increase the risk and maybe responsible for some of these higher numbers we're seeing. The unfortunate part of that is naloxone won't affect that drug. It only works on the opiate, so it does not reverse that drug. So you're only partially reversing the overdose if that's in play. Also, if you have very high concentrations of things like fentanyl or some of these other stronger synthetic opioid derivatives, the naloxone won't be as effective. You need higher and higher doses, which is why I really emphasize also using basic BLS, I call it, but, you know, respiratory rescue breathing, getting that patient those breaths, kind of resetting that hypoxic clock so we have time to treat the patient.
Dr. Eberlein, briefly as we wrap up, are you hopeful that that Narcan will be available over the counter in the near-ish future?
I am. It would open up some other options as far as distribution, like vending machines and things like that that you could place in high-risk areas. And like I said, hopefully the cost isn't prohibitive to people.
Dr. Eberlein, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Absolutely. Anytime. Have a great day.
You too. That's Dr. Chris Eberlein, emergency physician at Gunderson Health. He joined us to talk about the overdose medication naloxone or Narcan and calls to make it available over the counter. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Larry Mueller joins me. We're here today to raise the money that pays for the programs you count on, programs like this one. Support from people like you is the largest piece of the funding for WPR programs. That's why your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And we have 5 minutes left in this hour looking for two more people to join in. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener powered. That means that your donation right now makes a big difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Man, this last segment was great with Dr. Eberlein. The FDA recommendation to make Narcan more available. And the so that information was great. Then the advice on how to use the materials, that was great. A little on cost. Then, what do we talk about prevention? And there was a little of that. And then what new drugs are out there. Man, that's a lot of great information that many of us can use. And I think these are the kinds of conversations you can count on from Central Time.
And Wisconsin Public Radio's listeners supported, so that means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes these kind of conversations possible. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
$10 a day Tuesday. We're in that right now. Celebrate how WPR makes you feel when you ask for your WPR T-shirt with your gift of $10 a month or more. This comfy tee features a mustard-colored message, informed, inspired, connected, on a navy background. Ask for yours at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Take advantage of this special offer. Tomorrow it goes back to $12 a month.
My name's Kelly Davis, and I live in Whitewater.
I'm Kathy Ross, and I live in Whitewater. I'm originally from North Carolina, and there, public radio was very much part of my life. And so about 6 years ago, I came to southeastern Wisconsin to be closer to my family. And one of the things that my daughter told me before I got here was, Mom, you're going to love WPR. And she was right.
All the credit is mine for introducing my mother to WPR. Probably one of the better things I've done for you, huh, Mom? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I would agree.
Yeah.
Make your contribution today because listener support makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Give now at WPR.org and click Donate.
Make that gift online at WPR.org or you can make a phone call to 888-202-2552. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Larry Mueller. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. That's why this winter member drive, your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, has a big impact.
Many listeners become donors out of a sense of shared commitment because you think of WPR as a resource that should be available to all, and because you yourself have been getting some value out of it or over the past year or two or maybe more. Time to put something back in.
Make a donation for yourself and also for the community. The amount is up to you. The important thing is that you participate. Make your first ever gift of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Once in a great while, you actually get more than you pay for, and I think WPR is one place where that's true every day. Maybe consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs you love.
Make that gift. It's hard to buy a lot for $2, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day, well, it makes a lot of news and talk and information possible. That works out to $60 a month. You can make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We got a couple of minutes left, and when two more people support the WPR programs in the next 2 minutes, we will meet our goal. We're listener-powered, and that's why your gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
Think about giving $10 a month or more. Ask for the new Wisconsin Public Radio T-shirt when you make that gift. Looking for just those last two gifts this hour? We could do it. You can put us over the top with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Scott and Kohler says, I've listened for years but never donated, and it was time to step up and contribute.
Thank you so much, Scott. That is great to hear. Thank you so much for making that gift. Well, now, how about you? You count on us for great conversations here on Central Time, on the Larry Mueller Show, every day of the week. Know that we count on you to help pay for it all. You can really make a big difference with your gift right now. $10 a month or more grabs you that T-shirt. Give online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thanks so much for your support.